spend a night, watch the earth come up. I've grown tired of that place. Won't you go with me? We could start a podcast. How do you do it? Make me feel like I do. How do you do it? It's better than I ever knew.
And it is that time of the week again, a new Sports City with Jay Smith. I'm here, Jay Smith, on radio.dominican.edu. Ooh, and am I excited for this show today? I am very, very excited for this show today. There's just so much going on in the sports this week. There's the trade deadline, there's March Madness, there's NFL free agency kicking in. It's just endless. It really is just endless. And there's always Kings, there's always Giants, there's always Niners. And there's always news for those three teams. And I love to bring you guys, all my loyal listeners, up to date on those news, on that news. So I like to plug a little Facebook here first. Go on Facebook. You can like Sports City with Jay Smith on Facebook. We're getting the likes up. And you can call in onto this show, onto next week, Tuesday, 5 to 6, on radio.dominican.edu. You can call in anytime. You disagree with what I'm saying? Call in, let me know. You agree? Call in, let me know. You want to make any point? Call in, let me know. I am welcome to calls. And that number to call in is 415-482-3587. Now again, that's 415-482-3587. And I will announce that again a couple times during the duration of the show. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but when I come back, we have a little special guest. Northwest correspondent Nicholas Wright is going to be on the show. It's a very exciting time. Nick Wright, my Northwest correspondent here on Sports City, he knows his stuff, and he knows his Northwest sports up in that Washington area, in that Seattle area, and he really does know his stuff. So I'm very excited to listen to what he has to say. Very excited to have him on the show. So we're going to take a quick break, and Nick Wright coming on Sports City next.
Yeah, looking around the room, I can tell that you are the most beautiful girl in the room.
In the whole wide room.
And when you're on the street, depending on the street, I bet you are definitely in the top three. Good looking girls on the street,
depending on the street.
And when I saw you at my mate's place, I thought, what is she doing at my mate's place? How did Dave get a hottie like that to a party like his good one, Dave?
Ooh, you're a legend, Dave.
I asked Dave if he's gonna make a move on you. He's not sure. I say, Dave, do you mind if I do? He says it doesn't mind, but I can tell it kind of mind. But I'm gonna do it anyway. I see you standing all alone by the stereo. I dim the lights down to very low. Here we go. You're so beautiful.
Beautiful.
You could be a waitress. You're so beautiful.
Beautiful.
You could be an air hostess in the 60s. You're so beautiful. Well, you could be a part-time model. And then I seal the deal. I do my moves, I do my dance moves. It's trouble too, just me and you. and seven other dudes around you on the dance floor. I draw you near, let's get out of here. Let's get in a cab. I'll buy you a cabana. I can't believe that I'm sharing a kebab with the most beautiful girl I have ever seen with a kebab. Ooh. Well, why don't we leave? Let's go to my house. We could feel each other up on the couch. Oh no, I don't mind taking a slap up. Oh no, oh, yeah. You're so beautiful.
Like a tree. Or a high-class prostitute.
You're so beautiful.
You could be a part-time model.
You could probably still have to keep your normal job.
Part-time model.
Spending part of your time modeling and part of your time next to me. Usually tidier than this.
And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. Now, I promised you Nick Wright, and you'll have Nick Wright on Sports City. But first, let's get into a little bit of King's Corner. Now, on King's Corner, we like to talk about the Kings. We like to talk about the Sacramento Kings. Luckily, we had spring break last week. I got to go to a Kings game on Friday night. Kings and Mavs, defending champions. Very exciting game for me. Very exciting game for the Kings. I was expecting, you know, the Kings, they lost by about 39 points last time they played the Mavs. It was in Dallas. The Kings are a bad road team, but they scored 23 points in the first half. That's inexcusable. That's disgusting, really. This time, the Kings played their best game of the year. Better than the Thunder game. Better than the first Lakers game. Better than the Spurs, Pacers. Better than all of those wins. I didn't see a truly bad performance by anyone on the Kings this entire game. It was incredible. It was amazing. It was beautiful to watch, and especially to watch in person. I had decent seats, but it was just beautiful to watch in person. I like to talk about Tyreek Evans, as I do. You know, I'm a big Tyreek hater. Everybody knows that. Everybody that talks to me knows that. The dude played well. The dude played really, really well. He drove to the basket, and not just drove to the basket, he drove to the basket early in the shot clock, too. He didn't wait till there were 6 seconds on the shot clock and then throw up a jumper. He drove, and he was finishing, too. He could drive right, especially drive right. And that when he can drive right, when they don't cut off his right side, he's almost unstoppable driving to the basket and getting those layups. Another thing about the Kings' win was that they really only went to the line 13 times. And I remember looking at the stats in that first, second quarter, they didn't go to the line too much. But of those 13 times, they made 13 of their baskets. 13 for 13. That's the Sacramento Kings, a team for about 15 years now has been bad at free throws. It's never gotten better, ever. It's always been bad. And they made 13 for 13. They made their free shots. And that difference was really what made the game maybe reachable for the Mavs to know. We're keeping ahead of this game, and we're staying ahead of this game. Another thing about the Kings' win was that they passed. And it wasn't passing and making risky passes, because they only had 14 turnovers, and I believe about four of those were in the last 4 minutes when all the scrubs were going in. Honeycutt, Whiteside, they got a little time. But they went in and got about 4 or 5 turnovers. The starters for the Kings got very little turnovers and had 25 assists. A total 25 to 14 turnover to assist ratio, which especially for the Kings is very, very good. That's excellent, actually. 25 assists is a lot for a team. It's really, it's good to see the team passing. And a lot of that does have to do with Isaiah Thomas coming in as a starter. But it's just good to see the team passing and playing an overall good game. 7 people on the team, including all 5 starters. Now that's Isaiah Thomas and the rest of them. All 5 of them were in double figures. Now we have a call here on Sports City. Sports City with Jay Smith. Who do we have here?
Hey, how you doing, Jordan?
Nick Wright, our Northwest correspondent here on Sports City. How are you, Nick?
I'm great. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Just having fun on the radio.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad to hear it.
Now, Nick,
I'm just hanging out in the bathroom at work. Don't have a whole lot of time, but I would love to talk some Isaiah with you.
Of course, and that's what we're here to do. Now,
great.
Isaiah Thomas, the point guard for the Sacramento Kings, a rookie in the 60th pick, the last pick in the draft, is all of a sudden the biggest thing in Sacramento. He won Western Conference Rookie of the Month for February, and Sacramento loves him. Now, we have Nick on here. And Nick, I'm just hoping that you can give the good listeners of Sports City a little background on Isaiah Thomas, since he did go to your beloved Washington University.
Yeah, he was a star at UW. I'm not sure how familiar all of your listeners are with Nate Robinson, the former point guard for the Knicks. And he also played at UW and was a point guard. And, he was not as selfless as Isaiah, and he had a lot of trouble the transformation from a college player to an NBA player. Of course, with the size,
yeah,
he's obviously at a disadvantage already.
For sure.
But Isaiah, I mean, he's just so competitive that he will do whatever it takes to help his team win, and he has sacrificed minutes. I know he's getting like around 30 minutes a game, which is fantastic to see. The guy just wants to win so bad. He'll do whatever it takes for his team. So I love that the Sacramento fans are giving him the credit that he deserves, and I know he's loving it down there.
Oh, yeah, and I really do think he is, too, and we definitely love him. Nick, I'd like to take you back to probably one of your best moments as a Husky fan, the Pac-12 championship last year with Washington in the final. Tell me about that experience for you.
Yes, oh, man. Boy, if we're just talking game against Arizona, man, that was...
No words, right?
That was just surreal. The two words that describe Isaiah the best were said during that game, and that is just cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded, yeah. He is, he is a star. That guy, he's going to do great things for the city of Sacramento, and he's going to do great things for the Kings. And there's no doubt in my mind that he will work his way up to the starting five.
And for the people listening that don't know, in that Pac-12 championship, he hit a step-back jumper to win the Pac-12 championship in that game against powerhouse Arizona. And good old Gus Johnson, one of the best commentators ever, was just screaming, and he screamed cold-blooded. It was a very famous call. It was very, very exciting to watch.
Cold-blooded. Yep, that is Isaiah for you. Curtis High School alum from Tacoma, Washington. He's representing our state and our city very well. We love to see him doing great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he really is doing great. I'd like to throw out a few numbers, actually. He was only a 32% three-point shooter at the University of Washington, and now he's actually shooting better. Even though the three-point line is farther away, he's shooting 37% from three-pointers, which is pretty good, actually, especially for a point guard not known for his shot. And in the past 12 games he's been a starter, he's averaging 14 points and 5 assists, in only 29-30 minutes a game, and he's shooting 47% from the field as a starter. So he is really, really picking it up as a starter.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those numbers tell it all. He's just he's a guy that's going to take advantage of every second on the court that he gets, and obviously he's been doing that lately, and Sacramento's been giving him more time, and I love that. I love that. They appreciate him.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate him. Now, could you talk a little bit more about his competitive edge? You talked about it a little bit, but I really do see that competitive edge in Isaiah.
Yeah, I mean, he just his will to win. The guy is he's gonna do anything. I mean, I was looking at some stats the other day, and I saw one of his stats that made me laugh was blocks per game, and he had 0.2 blocks per game as his career average, and that made me laugh. But you know, it just reminded me of all the things that the guy does to help his team win. He will, you know, he'll do it all for you if you want. And like in Sacramento, he'll be the distributor. He'll be the, you know, 25 minutes a game guy, and he'll just take care of the ball for you and help him win. And I really think that. That he and DeMarcus Cousins and Jimmer Fredette, you know, they're gonna build a bond, and I think Sacramento's gonna be a good team, and they're gonna be tough to compete with in the West in the next few years here.
Yeah, it really is looking good for Sacramento now. Now we can switch on to Nick's favorite team, and that would be transitioning actually to football. Now we haven't talked a lot about football on Sports City because really it's not football season. The show started at the end of football season. It's just not been big. And there have, especially with me, Jay Smith, being a Niners fan, not a lot of Niners news to go around. But as a Niner fan, I do care about what the Seahawks do. And Nick, I'd like to have you give a little summary of the Seahawks offseason so far.
Yeah, well, you know, Seahawks offseason really kind of started today, actually. They signed their great defensive end, Red Bryant, who has just been a complete run stopper for him. So it was fantastic to see them re-sign him today. As you know, free agency started today. And yeah, it's great to see that. I know they're going to be pursuing Mario Williams and possibly Matt Flynn at quarterback.
And those are two of the biggest names on the free agency market today.
Yeah, they have a lot of cap room, and they're willing to spend it. And Pete Carroll's going to go after those guys. So I love to see that, and I look forward to seeing how competitive the NFC West is going to get coming from, you know, a few years ago where it was the laughing stock of the NFL, and
really?
You know, now it's going to be consistent NFC champion teams coming out of the West. So
yeah,
it's going to be exciting.
It really is looking exciting for our division. What are your thoughts about Peyton Manning? The Seahawks have been thrown in with the Peyton Manning discussions the entire time. They have Tavares Jackson, but really long term, the Seahawks fans know, I think, that Tavares Jackson is just not going to get them anywhere. What are your thoughts about Peyton Manning coming to the Seahawks?
You know, I would love to see Manning in a Seahawks uniform. I know it would be 3 or 4 years. But I'd love to see that. I think if they can lock down a young quarterback who can win for them for the next 10 years, that would be a greater choice, even if it means not having as great a success right now in this next year, in the next 2 years.
Yeah,
so,
thinking long term.
But yeah, I would love to see Manning in a Seahawks uniform either way. But, you know, I am in the bathroom at work, and unfortunately I believe my time has run out before I get fired, so I should probably head back out.
Yeah, of course. I understand.
But thank you so much for having me, Jordan. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your listeners, and I hope everyone at Dominican is doing great.
You know, and I'm sure they all love to hear your voice, Nick, and it really is a pleasure to have you. Our Northwest correspondent,
thanks,
Nick Wright.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. It really is good to hear Nick talk again. Nick went to Dominican last semester, actually, and really, he's basically beloved by the entire student population, so really is good to hear his voice again. Now, we're going to take a break on Sports City. But first, I would like to have a little announcement. The famous Mr. Penguin contest is back, and it's happening this Friday night in the Conlin Center from 6 to 8. And the doors will be open at 5:30. Then at 10 is the Black and White Dance After Party. Tickets will be on sale in front of Calarega at lunch and at the front window of the Conlin Center at all times. Tickets are $5 for Mr. Penguin and only $2 for the dance. Go ahead and buy them both at the same time for only $7. Because, you know, 5 plus 2, that does equal 7. And it's to a good cause, too. All proceeds go towards the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So come have a fun night and support a good cause this Friday. All kinds of stuff going on the DU campus on Friday. So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, basically the biggest story in sports right now is March Madness. Ooh, it's exciting. Take a break on Sports City with Jay Smith, and you are listening to radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. Now, time for a little... We're just going to get right into it right now. Right now. It's March Madness time. Ooh, the best time of year. It really is. It just really is. Everything about March Madness is what's right in sports. It decides who for sure is the champion. It's not like college football when computers decide who's the champion. They put matchups together and they decide who is the best team of the year, and especially right now. If you go, you see UConn last year, they got hot and they were the best team for 3 weeks straight, and they showed it against everyone. And it always comes down to who's the best team for this 3 weeks. And if you're a good team, you will be that best team for 3 weeks. If you're not, say, any number one seed that loses in the second round, you don't deserve to be there. You don't deserve to be in that Final Four where a lot of people picked you. You disappointed for a reason. You know, I like to give my theories on March Madness. When I'm looking at what we like to call in the sports world giant killers, those 13, 12, 11 seeds that beat the 4, 5, 6 seeds and then beat the 2, 3, even 1 seeds in that next round. They are called giant killers. They kill those giants. They move on with shocking to everybody. But it seems like, in my research, that there are a few specific things that they all have in common. Most of the time, I go back to, I believe it was 2006, that George Mason team, that 10-seed George Mason team that made it to the Final Four. Veteran team. Almost all seniors in the starting lineup and almost all seniors on the team. They know what they're doing. They've been there before, and the pressure doesn't get to them. They're composed, and they really know what they're doing. They execute. Every team has a plan, and every team can have a flawless plan, but only if you execute, which the seniors and juniors do well, can you do it. Another thing that giant killers have in common is three-point shooting. Now, in NBA, and especially March Madness, I am a sucker for the three. Three-pointers, number one, gets you basically an extra possession than the other team. And number two, fires up the crowd more than anything. A late three-pointer is, to me, way more exciting than a late dunk. Because that three just gets you that extra edge. The crowd goes nuts. Your bench, you see all those March Madness scrubs that you love to see on the bench just absolutely going nuts. Another thing that they have in common is creating turnovers and not giving up turnovers. That's a big thing, is taking care of the ball and creating turnovers. You see some upsets because the other team has that high-pressure defense, or the giant killer has that high-pressure defense, and the supposedly better team doesn't know what to do. They've never experienced such ferocity and such madness. Really, you know, madness is the word for this time of year. They've never experienced the madness of this high-pressure defense that creates turnovers and creates easy buckets. And that's the thing that you really need to focus on if you're going to beat a 3 or 4 seed. You need to get easy buckets. Those 3 and 4 seeds, those 2 seeds like Kentucky, Ohio State, Kansas, all of those blue chip programs, they have the recruiting to get the 6'11 players, to get the 7-foot players like Anthony Davis. And you're just not going to score on them inside. You're not going to get those half-court offense easy layups that you've been getting in your weak conference. If you can get those easy buckets, get maybe like 25, 30 fast break points, which has been done before, that's an easy way. And that's really is one of the easiest ways to beat one of those giants. Another thing that I love to watch is the veteran coaches. Now, people like Bill Self and Tom Izzo, they always have kind of the 5th or 6th most talented team in maybe even like the 10th most talented team in the nation. But then they just keep winning. And Tom Izzo, I remember one year where Michigan State, where Tom Izzo coaches, was 3 or 4 seed. And I was like, man, Tom, it seems like Michigan State has been in the Final Four just like the last 5 out of 6 years or something. I think I'm going to put him in my Final Four. Maybe the national championship game. I completely called it. Probably the best March Madness bracket calling that I've ever done. And there have been... That's not really saying much, because I will admit, my bracket, done a bracket probably every year for the past 10, 11 years, and it's never good. Never, ever, ever. I'm usually about in the 47th percentile on ESPN. Just, it's just never good. I always think, oh, this year I'll do well. Never. Never, ever. And let's get into this year, actually. Fab Mello of Syracuse, their center, their anchor, a future lottery pick, ineligible because of grades. Incredible. How can you do this to your team? Ineligible because of grades when your team is a number one seed and basically expected to get to the Final Four. It's Final Four, it's championship or bust. And you do this to your team, and you are the anchor of their famed Jim Boeheim 2-3 defense at Syracuse? How can you do that? It's not the vent yet. It's not the vent on Sports City. I can't get into this vent, but it really is inexcusable for Fab Mello. And that ruined my bracket because I had Syracuse winning it all at the beginning of this day. But now I have them losing the Elite Eight to Ohio State. And that bracket, I think, is wide open. It could go to Ohio State. It could go to Florida State. The reason I don't think Florida State has it over Ohio State, really, it's just the turnovers. They turn over so much, and they're very inconsistent with their shooting. They have a few shooters, but they're not consistent. If they were consistent, they'd be shooting 42-43% from... They would have a few guys shooting that way from three, but they don't. They're too inconsistent for that. And so I think Florida State is just bound for an upset, really. I think, in my opinion, they're not gonna go past the Sweet 16 at all. I think Ohio State has it all over them. But the champion, for me, the champion of this tourney is Missouri. The number two seed in the Western Conference, actually. Now that conference, the number one seed is Michigan State. And I did talk about Tim Izzo and Michigan State. But this year's Michigan State team is just not as talented as it usually is. It's just not as talented. And I think Missouri will take it over, any team that they have. A lot of people are picking Murray State in that quarter of the bracket to go far. Murray State went 30-1 this year. Just all kinds of wins and basically no losses. And they beat good teams, too. They beat Memphis. They beat St. Mary's. These are tournament teams. But you know what I see about Murray State? I see that they give up 14 turnovers a game. Now, that's average to below average for an NBA team. For a college team, that's bad. Straight up bad. And the thing that I see that Murray State... Oh, you know what? Murray State, they shoot. They shoot and shoot and shoot, and they have veterans. But then you look at Missouri, and they do the same exact thing, but they take care of the ball. And that's really what I'm thinking for that Murray State-Missouri game that, to me, is bound to happen. I don't think anything... I don't think Marquette has the talent to get over Murray State. I think Murray State will surprise some people into the Sweet 16, but Missouri, that's my championship team. They have veterans, and they have coaching, and they have a fire, too. Missouri and Kansas, that rivalry this year came up to all kinds of new notches. And Missouri won 30 games this year. Winning 30 games in college basketball is a huge feat. And like I said, I like teams with that high pressure. Missouri has that high pressure. Offense and defense, they go for the fast break. They go absolutely nuts. They just run and run and run. I think in college basketball, if you have the right coaching and the right personnel, I really do think that that can get you places. Another team that I kind of like are teams... high-risk, high-reward teams, like Baylor. Now, unfortunately, Baylor is in the same bracket as Kentucky, and with Kentucky's talent, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, it's just unbelievable the talent that they have and the talent that John Calipari is able to recruit every single year. But I think Baylor might have a chance in the Elite Eight against Kentucky, and I think Baylor is definitely going to go to the Elite Eight over Duke, because Duke... they have a backcourt, and it seems like that's kind of it. They have Austin Rivers and Seth Curry in their backcourt, and both have relatives that are involved in the NBA right now, but that's it. I think if you just have a backcourt in March Madness, you need at least a couple guys to do decent in the paint. You need that offensive rebounding. You need rebounding to create more possessions. As the more possessions you get, the better you're going to do. And I think Baylor, they have that high-risk, high-reward talent that can beat even the biggest of people. They beat Kansas. They beat San Diego State. They beat those Aztecs. I think that even though they're inconsistent at times, they lost to Missouri 3 times. That's a little ridiculous. But then you look and they beat Kansas. So that inconsistency, I think, might even come in handy in the March Madness. As long as you get hot and Perry Jones and Quincy AC, really just Perry Jones. He's so good. He just muscles people. And that front court is just so good for Baylor that I think they can get hot. And they can get hot at the right time, especially against Duke. I'm very much looking forward to that Baylor-Duke game that hopefully will come up. Now, on to the Midwest part of the bracket. The Midwest is kind of wide open. And really, I keep saying this team is wide open, this part of the bracket is wide open. Other than Kentucky, which is by far the most talented team, I mean, they have a lot of freshmen, but they're by far the most talented team in the nation. Every other bracket is wide open to me. I think that UNC, they have injuries to John Henson and Dexter Strickland. I think those injuries will really affect them, just like Fab Melo being out for Syracuse. Not having your stars is not good for this time of year. And I think North Carolina is in for a kind of a rude awakening. And the team that I think is going to beat them is Michigan. Now, Michigan, not really known for basketball. You had Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, that 5-5 back in the day. But since then, not a lot has gone on for Michigan basketball-wise. But I think that since, you know, I am a sucker for the three, since they have that three-point shooting, and they shoot so many threes, all they need to do is have a few go in, and that really gets the momentum going. Plus, I've seen Tim Hardaway Jr. play in person. That guy is unbelievable. Just crunch time, he's solid, he's so quick, and he has such good balance that it's almost impossible for him and Trey Burke, his backcourt member, to be guarded, both of them at the same time. And they shoot so many threes, and I don't think that North Carolina, without John Henson, is going to be able to take advantage of their rebounding and size advantage to beat Michigan. And I think Michigan is going to go to the Elite Eight. Unfortunately, I have them losing to Kansas in the Elite Eight, and Kansas will actually go to the Final Four. The main stat I look at with Kansas is that they score 75 points a game and only give up 62. That's a 13-point point-per-game differential. That's huge, especially for college basketball. That's incredible. They just outshoot everybody, and then Thomas Robinson down low, 23 double-doubles, which is tied for first in the nation. That's a big man that can get it done, and big men, unlike three-point shooting, they have that big man to be consistent, and big men are consistent. You know, if you're shooting from 5 feet away, that's a pretty high percentage shot, and they have the backcourt, and they are not as turnover prone as other giants, and I think that they will make the Final Four. And on to actually that Syracuse bracket in the Eastern Division. With Syracuse out, with Fab Melo out, I thought maybe they can still make it to the Final Four. Maybe they have the talent and they have the coaching to make it to the Final Four. But you look at Ohio State's talent, and you see, all you have to see is Jared Sullinger. The guy is a monster, just an absolute monster down low. And he's just, it's pretty incredible what he can do. He's only 6'8", but it's a big, big guy. And Ohio State's fourth best player scores 15 points a game. I don't understand how that team doesn't find its way in a weaker bracket now all the way to the Final Four. Now, We are actually going to take a break here for March Madness, but after the break, we have some breaking NBA news. You are not going to want to miss this. Sports City here on radio.dominican.edu. Now, I left you guys hanging with a little breaking news update before the break, and I will not disappoint. Now, the news is that Bay Area favorite Warriors have traded Monte Ellis. It's finalized that they've traded Monte Ellis to the Magic. So the Magic are trying to get Dwight Howard to stay. Andrew Bogut from the Milwaukee Bucks, an all-star center a few years ago, is going to the Warriors, so the Warriors are finally getting their much-needed big. And also, Steven Jackson is going to the Warriors. Now, that's a big trade. That is definitely the trade of the year right now. And it's very interesting, because right now, the Warriors, the way that they look, their entire their two best players, Steph Curry and Andrew Bogut, both have serious, serious injury problems, as in have completely wasted their careers with injury problems, serious. So right now, Warriors fans are praying, really, really praying that Curry can get better soon and that Bogut is not Greg Oden waiting to happen. Now, Bogut got traded before Oden, but he's been playing a little bit more. And like I said, he's an all-star. He's a very, very fundamentally sound big man. With him and Brandon Jennings for the Bucks a couple years ago, they were a playoff team. With Brandon Jennings, a rookie, and not even rookie of the year, as their second best player. And Andrew Bogut really was the one that led them to the playoffs. So Bogut has talent. It's just that, you know what? I really don't think, I don't know. It's really, really a tough one. And we actually have Brian Sanchez, host of the Sports Report from 6 to 8 on radio.dominican.edu. We have him here, our local Warriors fans, to talk about the trade. Brian, welcome to the show.
Jay Smith, thanks for having me on, buddy. First of all, it's Ellis to the Bucks. It's straight up Ellis to the Bucks, and it goes even deeper. It's a five-player trade. Warriors are getting Andrew Bogut and Steven Jackson. The Warriors are trading Monte Ellis, the expiring contract of Kwame Brown, and here's the kicker that is going to be the big question mark. Epe Udo is going to the Bucks. They traded Epe Udo in this deal.
Sports City, who do we have here?
This is Kirk from Carmichael.
Hey, Kirk, how you doing?
I'm good. Big fan, been listening to you a lot. And I want to talk some baseball. Is that okay?
You know, that's just fine with me. I'm always down for baseball talk.
Okay, well, I'm a big Giants fan.
As am I.
And I feel we need some bats. And what do you think we can do to get some more hitting this year? We got the pitching. I'm just a little worried about our hitting.
You know, right now, the only thing that we can change about our hitting is getting Brandon Belt more playing time. That's the only thing in-house, since offseason's just about over, except hopefully signing Matt Cain to an extended contract. Right now, it's just all about getting Brandon Belt playing time, because he could potentially be our third best hitter behind Posey and Sandoval.
Yeah, I'm sure hoping for Pablo to have a big year this year.
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda. I'm expecting Panda to actually advance beyond what anybody else is thinking. I think that he could get MVP votes this year. If he stays healthy, last year, he was by far, I mean, when I say by far, as in four times as valuable as any other Giant, and he was out for a month and a half. That's how good of a hitter he was.
Yeah, no, he had a good year when he was healthy. Let's hope for a full year. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm excited about our chances this year.
Yeah, really, I think it really is about health concerns for the Giants right now, at least with Posey. You know, he has that busted ankle. Hopefully he can recover from that. Posey, Sandoval, hopefully Belt can get some playing time. It's a lot about injury risk right now for the Giants.
Yeah. Okay, well, hey, thanks, and keep up the good show.
Thanks for calling, Kirk. Thank you, Kirk, for the call. And back to that baseball news, actually. Or, sorry, basketball news. That's very interesting. I had the trade wrong. I'm sorry for giving out misinformed information, but that's very, very different. Now, I'm processing this as you guys are. I just want you to know that. I'm processing this at the same time as all of you listeners are, and that's quite the trade. They're trading Udo, which, for the past about 2-3 weeks since he's been starting, Warriors fans have just been obsessed with him. He's playing out of position at center, but Warriors have Andres Biedrins at center, and that really doesn't get too much worse than that. Trading Udo definitely affects them. I think if they kept Udo at the power forward, or at least at a forward spot with Bogut, and then you add Curry, that's a formidable team, and that's not a veteran team. That's still a fairly young team that you can build off of. But getting rid of Udo, I think Warriors GM, I really, really a little bit skeptical on that, actually. Now, Kirk brought up a good point. And that good point is the San Francisco Giants. And the San Francisco, bringing up the San Francisco Giants is always a good point in my book. Now, we're in spring training right now for the San Francisco Giants and for the major and for Major League Baseball. Spring training, you know, it's exciting. You get excited. I'm excited. I'm ready for baseball season to start April 13th. Can't come fast enough. I just want to see that orange and black on the field, see Buster Posey on the field, see everybody, see Timmy Lincecum. It's very, very exciting. But as Giants fans, I want to caution you to be a little bit, just be cautious with the spring training and be cautious with the numbers of spring training. Because I did a little bit of research and I came up with basically for the past 10 years, the best performers in spring training for the Giants. And they're names that you really don't want to hear for the best spring training performer. In 2002, Damon Minor hit .408 with 7 home runs and 12 RBIs in spring training. In 2003, Nyfy Perez hit .434 with 2 home runs and 10 runs scored. In 2004, Tony Torquato hit .378 with 1 homer and 11 RBIs. I'm just still going. I don't think anybody that's listening right now has heard of any of these names. And they just raked in spring training. 2005, Brian Dalamore hit .519, 6 doubles, 12 RBIs. 2006, Jason Ellison, Lance Negro hitting about .400, multiple homers, multiple RBIs, multiple doubles. The list, I could go on and on and on. The list goes on. Dave Roberts, Fred Lewis, all of these guys just were absolutely killing it in spring training. And then good old Aaron Rowand and John Bowker in 2010, two of our three starting outfielders for opening day in 2010. And we all know how Rowand ended up being DFA'd or designated for assignment last August. John Bowker, as much as it kills me to say it, he is a local boy from Sacramento, went to my rival high school, Rio Americano. He just never figured it out. And then 2011, I want to remind everybody that Aubrey Huff hit .362 with 5 homers and 14 RBIs in the 2011 spring training. That's amazing. And then he hit .246 in the regular season and completely stopped Brandon Belt from playing at all and completely killed the Giants' hopes for any repeat. You just have to remember, it's spring training. It doesn't matter at all. It's good to get excited. It's good to have fun with it, but it just doesn't matter that much. And as much as it kills me to say it, seeing Melky Cabrera and seeing all these guys just hit really, really well in spring training, that doesn't really matter. And that brings me on to my next part about the Giants. I promised last week that I would give two Giants players, one to regress and one to get even better this year. Unfortunately, my regression pick is Melky Cabrera. In 2011 for the Kansas City Royals, he had an OPS plus, which is probably the best statistical way to measure a hitter. He had an OPS plus of 107, and the average is 100. Now, that's pretty good. He hit really well. 20-plus homers, RBIs, average. He had it all. He looked really, really good for the Royals last year. But I just keep remembering all his young days with the Yankees, and especially in 2010 with the Braves, he just wasn't a good baseball player. Just straight up not good at baseball. He's still slow. And he's not a good center fielder. Please, please, Bruce Bochy, don't play him in center field, especially in AT&T Park. And I also remember in the 2010 National League Championship Series when the Giants played the Braves, Melky Cabrera looked just lost, like he didn't belong on a baseball field. He was striking out every time. It kind of reminded me of Pat Burrell in that World Series. He just didn't look like a baseball player, and he just it was almost sad to see. And I just think that one good year will, it wasn't the truth. I don't think that's the real Melky Cabrera. I think we saw the real Melky Cabrera when he was not hitting with the Yankees and the Braves. But on to better things. And I like better things. Better things with the Giants are always fun. And my better things have to do with Timmy Lincecum. Big time Timmy Jim. The franchise, the freak, all those names for him. Now, Tim Lincecum, he wasn't projected to do any different from his last 3 years. He's been Cy Young worthy for the last three, maybe not 2010, but last 4 years, he's been a Cy Young pitcher. People are kind of expecting him, you know, he's going to get injured. He's going to have a bad year. Look at that delivery. Look at that. Look at all the innings he's been pitching. It's going to happen that he's going to get injured. And what I'm thinking is that's completely false. Chris Lincecum, Tim Lincecum's dad, specifically, and a lot of Giants fans know the story, specifically taught Tim Lincecum to pitch the way that he does with that crazy delivery because it utilizes every single motion of the body to get all possible power into his pitch and with as little injury risk as possible. And I think that he was completely right. You see now Trevor Bauer, a prospect for the Diamondbacks, one of the best prospects in the game. He's coming up. He's known as Tim Lincecum Jr., Tim Lincecum Part 2. And I think Tim Lincecum, who is supposed to regress a little bit, people see, oh, August 2010, he was bad. 2011, his walks went up. No, I don't think any of that is true. I think that he pitched amazing last year, and I think that Tim Lincecum will have... He will get Cy Young votes this year. People keep saying, you know, we need to get Matt Cain. We need to get Matt Cain signed. Matt Cain is the priority of Tim Lincecum right now. I think that's hogwash. I think that Tim Lincecum is better than Matt Cain. I love Matt Cain like a father, but I think Timmy Lincecum will always have that it factor that he's better than Matt Cain, and it's always saying Matt Cain. He has the delivery and he has the stature that he will never get injured. But you know what? Tim Lincecum, he won't get injured. I'm saying that right now. He won't get injured and he will continue to pitch the way that he has been for years and years and years. And that's why it's so, so important for the Giants and for Brian Sabian to re-sign him. Now, we're going to take a break, actually, and... Unfortunately, that's actually the final break of this edition of Sports City. I'd like to thank everybody for listening right now to this fourth edition of Sports City with Jay Smith. You've been listening to radio.dominican.edu.